What we're gonna do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to another episode from the WWE Radio Archives. I am Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 790. And each week, I'm gonna select an evergreen episode from the archives to share with you that maybe you haven't heard before, or one that you haven't heard in a long time. From interviews to top tens, relevant reviews, guides, Wayback Machines, and more. It's a great way to visit or revisit some of our favorite episodes, including ones that you have suggested that I share from the archives. And this week, I had a chance to get a sneak peek at the all-new Country Bear Musical Jamboree, and in honor of the attraction officially opening on July 17th, this week, we're going to take a detailed look at the history and the legacy of the original versions, plural, of this opening day Walt Disney World attraction. This episode was from show number 275 back in 2012. That was part DSI Disney Scene Investigation and part Wayback Machine, as at that time, the Country Bear Jamboree had remained almost exactly the same as it appeared on October 1st, 1971. So I invite you to please join us as we explore the history, stories, details, characters, a bit of Americana, and our musical heritage of the past at the Country Bear Jamboree. And if you want to see the new Country Bear Musical Jamboree show, I have a full recording of the very first show from my live video that morning. It's on the WWE Radio blog. You can also find it in the clubhouse on Facebook and our YouTube channel. And I'd love to know what you think of the new show and the music. How do you feel about classic attractions like this being renovated, updated, reimagined? You can share your thoughts over in the clubhouse at www.radio.com/clubhouse or call the voicemail. I'll play your answer on the air at 407-900-9391. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our free weekly email newsletter and updates at www.radio.com. And when you do, you can get a free copy of my 102 Things to Do at least once in Walt Disney World. And more importantly, you'll receive weekly updates about Disney news, special content and updates, events, contests, and more. Please also connect with me on social. I am at Lou Mangiello on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And visit loumangiello.com if you're looking for a speaker, or if you're a creator, entrepreneur, or solopreneur looking to take your business, brand, or idea to the next level. You can find out some of the ways I can help you. We can work together. And about my Momentum series of events, including my workshop this fall in Walt Disney World. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode from the archives on the WWE Radio Show.
Henry, what's holding you up? Let's get on with the show. We can't hang around here all day.
Now, Buff, be patient. Takes a little doing to set these things up.
Yeah, we ain't going anywhere anyhow. We're kind of hung up here.
Okay, Buff, take it easy. Now we're ready to start. Sorry, folks. I'll be right with you. Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
In the past 40 years, Walt Disney World has gone through many changes. It's grown far beyond what we saw in 1971, from a single park to four, two hotels to more than 20, and entertainment, dining, and attractions that expand beyond the confines of the theme parks. And during that time, while there were many additions, we also lost some classic favorites. But in the more than four decades since opening day, some of our favorites have actually remained. And while many of those have actually been rehabbed, refurbed, re-updated, and expanded in many ways, there's one that remains nearly identical to the way it was on October 1st, 1971. So this week, we're going to go way back and yet stay current as we do a DSI Disney Scene Investigation of an attraction that features the wildest bunch of foot-stomping, knee-slapping, rip snorters ever to lumber out of the North Woods, the Country Bear Jamboree. So joining me this week is our own bunch of cuddlesome fluff direct from the hills of North Carolina, featuring a little bit of Americana over at the Mainstream Gazette. He is Pretty Little Ryan P. Wilson. Welcome back, buddy.
It's good to be back. I didn't bring any flim flam with me, but I do have the mouth harp.
There's the easy yak yak flim flam chit chat thing we got going on. So, you know, we talked about this a bunch of times, you and I, offline, as we've been looking through and sort of going through some attractions from Walt Disney World's opening day. And I kept on coming back to this one. And, you know, what I said in the introduction is kind of true. We could almost be doing the same show today that we would have done if we were doing it on October 1st.
Absolutely.
1971.
Absolutely. There's been very little that's changed with this attraction. You know, it's had some side shows, it's had some other things happen, but for all intents and purposes, yeah, it's stayed true to form in its corner of Frontierland since day one.
And the ironic thing, and a lot of people don't necessarily realize this about the attraction, you know, as we start thinking about its history and how it got there, was it was never meant for Walt Disney World. And when I say that to people, say, oh yeah, well, of course, you know, Walt meant it for Disneyland, but that's actually not the case. And when I try and explain this to people, and we'll sort of get to this idea of where it was supposed to go, I sort of go back to that Walt tenet of you don't follow pigs with pigs. Meaning, after the success of The Three Little Pigs, people asked him if he was going to do a sequel, and he says, no, you don't follow pigs with pigs. You don't repeat yourself. And so the idea of necessarily doing another Disneyland was not necessarily something that Walt wanted to do, and he always wanted to do something different, and that's where he came up with this idea of not building a theme park, but building somewhere else that wouldn't be about a similar Disneyland, and that's where Mineral King came to be.
Right, and this kind of stemmed from his involvement with the Winter Olympics in 1960 in Squaw Valley, that he realized, you know, there's such just gorgeous amount of pristine nature, and the idea for a full-time, full-year summer-winter kind of skiing outdoor complex came into play with Mineral King.
Yeah, and he wanted to build it in a beautiful area by California's Sequoia National Park, so sort of that national park, the perfect location for it. And this is another one of those things. Maybe we should do a show about Mineral King, because it's one of those concepts that wasn't just a drawing board, blue sky thing. There was concept art. There was land purchase. I mean, the plane was in flight. This was actually going to take place.
Lincoln, Zed, and Fred, and a bear named Lemonade.
So clap your hands and stomp your feet to the bear toe tapping rhythm. Chuck your worries out the door and try to keep right with them. Brother Zeb is playing fiddle, and he plunked some on the uke. A real bear on the banjo, and his guitar ain't no fluke.
And one of the things he wanted to do was, you know, certainly entertainment was going to be at the forefront of the resort, just like he had done on TV and with his movies and certainly at Disneyland. And he wanted this show to have a band that was actually going to be featuring bears. I mean, it certainly fit into the location.
Right. And I think I like the idea of a Mineral King show. I really do. But he wanted this bear band restaurant show. And some of these names are going to sound familiar, some of them aren't, but it was going to have bears like Little Lemonade Bear, Big Fred, Old Zeke, Cousin Ted, Brother Zeb, all putting on this you know, a bit of Americana show, you know, all this music during a dinner theater kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, there's a variety of reasons why the Mineral King didn't get built. And again, I think we should do a show on that and sort of talk about how that evolved. But when Walt was putting this project together, he put two of his best men on it. He put Mark Davis, sort of the funny man, and Albertino, who both obviously came from a history of working on the films. And again, he had this concept of this bear band restaurant sort of being at the forefront, but they didn't really know what it was going to be. Was it going to be a marching band, a mariachi band, a Dixieland band? And went through all these different machinations of what they were going to look like or what kind of music they were actually going to be singing to.
Right, and this goes back to that concept art. There's just tons of Mark Davis drawings about the different bears that were going to inhabit this world in Mineral King.
Yeah, and it's sort of interesting to see how those things change. And look, Mark Davis, you know, certainly I'm sure you're familiar with his name and his work. He was the funny man. He was the man who sort of brought all of the comedy and gags into things like the Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean. Certainly his mark is all over the Country Bear Jamboree. And, you know, unfortunately, because of environmental concerns, Mineral King doesn't get built, but it eventually comes to Walt Disney World. And, you know, tying this into Walt, because, you know, Walt very much did have his hand and his imprint on this as well, too. One of the stories that's always told about the Country Bear Jamboree is that it has sort of an affectionate name of being Walt's last laugh. And a lot of times, and you hear people that work with Walt, Richard Sherman tells a story, for example, saying if Walt liked something, if he loved something, his response would be, that'll work. Like, you knew, wow, Walt must love this. But there's obviously a story about Mark Davis taking drawings and showing these to Walt and how he reacted not long before he died.
Yeah, and it really was. It was in that late 60s period, and Walt just fell in love with the stuff that Mark was doing and Al was doing, and was ready to go forward with this. And then there was some legal wrangling, and really we lucked out and it came to the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the last things that Walt actually had a chance to see as far as concept art is concerned. And when Mark showed it to him, you know, Walt, he belly laughed. And that's why they sort of call it Walt's last laugh. And, you know, they also talked about how when Walt came into Mark Davis's office to see the characters again, because he loved these characters, he did something, and Alice Davis actually told this story as well, too, that when he left, he said goodbye. And that's something that Walt just never did. He never said goodbye. He just sort of walked out or said, see you tomorrow, or whatever it might be. And as legend goes, he walked out, he said goodbye. Mark sort of thought that odd. And just a couple of days later, he passed away on December 15th, 1966.
Right. And so in that nature, you do have Walt's fingerprints on this attraction, whether he was there to see the finished product or not.
Right. And eventually they come up with a concept of having this bear band not be in a restaurant, but they would be country bears. And since it didn't work out in Mineral King, it would have fit perfectly time-wise, location-wise, into Frontierland in Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. So again, a couple other legendary Imagineers come in to work on it. Exotencio, George Bruns, create the music for the bears to sing, and it gets this sort of very country flair to it. And when it opens up, Ryan, on opening day as an e-ticket attraction, so letting you know sort of how popular they realized this was going to be early on, there was a couple of interesting things about it. And from a business perspective, one of the, even before you walked inside, was that Country Bear Jamboree had not won, because we know Disneyland, Walt Disney World, built and created thanks to sponsorship money from outside corporations, whether it's Carnation, Coca-Cola, whoever it is. But there was not one, but two sponsors here. One was Frito-Lay, longtime sponsor of Disneyland. And the second sponsor, and this gets people very excited, was actually Pepsi.
Welcome to the one and only original Country Bear Jamboree, presented by Pepsi-Cola and Frito-Lay. Featuring a bit of Americana, our musical heritage of the past. But enough of this chit-chat, yak-yak, and flim-flam. Just refrain from hibernating. And we'll all enjoy the show, because we've got a lot to give.
Right, and I know we're going to get to it later, but they also sponsored right next door the Mile Long Bar. And it was Pepsi, you know, everyone hears Pepsi, they're like, no, Coca-Cola has always been in Disney World. But for quite a few years early on, both Coke and Pepsi were sold and sponsored in Walt Disney World.
Yeah, that makes a lot of people very happy and or very sad that that they could have the choice between the two. And it's funny, even though Wonder Bread replaced Pepsi as a sponsor in 1975, if you listen to Henry's dialogue at the beginning, he talks about just refrain from hibernating and we'll all enjoy the show because we got a lot to give. That was actually a reference to an old Pepsi slogan, which was, you've got a lot to live, Pepsi's got a lot to give. And so that actually just, it still remains in there to this day.
Right. And it is that subtle nod, and people like you and I, and you know, this goes back to why we didn't date in high school, understand that, get that. And for everyone else, it's a throwaway.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll talk about, well, maybe we should mention here, this is an e-ticket attraction. It's super popular. Again, not a lot's going on in Frontierland on opening day. And so the lines outside of Country Bear are very long. Again, speaking to Mark Davis, Thunder Mesa, Western River Expedition supposed to come. It's so popular that not long thereafter, they decide they're going to open it up in Disneyland. Actually, the very first attraction to debut in Walt Disney World and then get copied elsewhere, first in Disneyland and then Tokyo. So in 72, it opens in a land that they end up calling Bear Country.
Right. And Walt Disney World, we could hold 350 guests in a theater, but it was never enough. It was, the line was leading out into shops and just causing really kind of chaos in Frontierland when the park first opened in 71. So that when it went to Disneyland, they actually built twin theaters for it so they could have double the capacity. But the show, even though everyone in Florida was clapping along, you know, thumping their paws, it never had the same appeal as it had in Florida as it did in Disneyland.
Yeah, so it only lasts until September 2001, and then the Country Bear Playhouse goes dark, and it's replaced, and I say this all the time, half-jokingly, by a killer. Winnie the Pooh is a killer. He killed the Country Bears in Disneyland, and he killed Mr. Toad in Disney World.
What does that make? You know, if we're cannibals, he's a. I don't know what food would be in that situation. But similarly, and it's another subtle nod. On the halls of Grizzly Hall in Disney World, there are bear pelts hanging on the wall, which doesn't necessarily bode well for the bears.
Yeah, it's ironic because if you take a look, even before you walk in, if you look at the building, and it also ties into the backstory, take a close look at the exterior of the building because it's meant to resemble a Northwood-style Union Hall. And the backstory with this is that Ursus H. Bear, he wakes up from his hibernation early, realizes that these trappers and loggers have sort of abandoned this Union Hall. He has all of his, musically inclined friends, and they decide to sort of put on a celebration down home, and we are sort of guests of theirs. And if you look outside, you're right, it's ironic to see bear pelts outside. You also see a date on top of the Union Hall, and it's 1898. And this ties in very importantly to the story of Frontierland, because I talk about Grizzly Hall as sort of it's a crossroads, right? Because the story of Frontierland really begins in Liberty Square, where we're sort of following America's journey as we expand from east to west. What some people sometimes forget is at the same time, we're also expanding from west to east. All those people after the California Gold Rush are now starting to move eastward. So if you notice the dates on the buildings as you leave Liberty Square, 1787, they increase until you get to Grizzly Hall at 1898. As you start heading towards Splash and Big Thunder Mountain, they go back down because this is where East meets West and West meets East right here at Grizzly Hall.
Right. It's one of those great pieces everyone seems to know that I talk to nowadays that the numbers go up, but they don't catch that pivot point actually of the date where it shifts and it goes backwards and you're getting this migration and this population growth from both sides and it does. It meets right there at Grizzly Hall and you had the bears coming in and so you get the floor with all the claw prints and it's just a big amalgamation of a lot of things at that moment.
Yeah, and there are great details, again, outside and inside, that really sell you on the story of what this is. And that's the thing about Disney. If those claw marks weren't there, it wouldn't matter. Nobody would say anything like, hey, there really should be claw marks here if there's bears coming in and out. But this really helps to sell that story. And that's one of those cute little details that you find throughout the building. And then you walk in and you've got this logger's cabin outside, but then you have this beautiful, this very ornate proscenium theater inside.
Absolutely. You have the stage lights up there. There's the portrait of Urias up at the top to, the father of the hall effectively. The curtains are very plush, and it just has this, really great old feel to it of a stage you would have found anywhere in the country.
Yeah. And again, as you sort of, I always tell people to look up, look down, because you'll get a sense of some of the details that really sort of fill in the gaps from the exterior Union Hall to what it would look like inside, which were those heavy beamed ceilings. But let's get to sort of the show itself. It's a show that, and we'll talk about some of the exceptions and some of the changes over the years, but one that really hasn't changed throughout the years. And I think it's due to A, the characters, and B, the music. So we can talk a little bit about some of the characters. There's 24 audio animatronic figures in there, including 18 bears. And obviously, the main character, not necessarily everybody's favorite, because we all love Big Al, but sort of the host and the MC is Henry. And Henry is voiced by Pete Renaday, who, for a lot of people who are familiar, especially with some of the older attractions, was really prevalent in things like Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, Winnie the Pooh, my favorite was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So you can get a sense of Pete Renaday, still that same voice today as it was in 1971.
Yeah, he really was one of the voices of the park early on, and he does this great job as the MC of the show, as Henry. And Henry has this, he's supposed to look, he's in this suit and tie, so he has this like starched shirt front. Think the map from Peter Pan, if you don't understand what I'm talking about, that flies up in the father's face. But he's trying to look presentable. He's trying to keep some decorum when things get a little out of hand. And Pete Renaday does a masterful job with it.
And all of the individual bears all have a different personality, all have a different look to them. There's Liver Lips and Wendell and Teddy Barra and Ernest and Terrence. And many of the voices are from people that, of names that you might not know, but there was actually sort of a family of performers and voiceover actors, the Stoneman family. And there was Jimmy Stoneman, Roni Stoneman, Van Stoneman, all who did a number of different voices throughout there for all the different bears as well, too.
Right. They were Terrence and Teddy Barra and Ernest, like we talked about. They were a big part of what made the Country Bears a huge success.
Another famous sort of voiceover, another voice you can hear in Frontierland, was of Zeke. He's one of the sort of the leader of the five bear rugs. He was actually voiced for a long time by Dal McKennon, who does the Wildest Ride in the Wilderness. He also does Benjamin Franklin. You can actually still hear, if you have some of the old original recordings, and I think even a CD from the early 2000s, you can hear that as well, too. And then eventually Randy Sparks re-recorded his voice for Zeke, but you can catch some of the old Dal McKennon and the original voices on some of those old recordings as well, too.
But I fell in love with a pudding little gal, and sure enough, she's married.
Attaboy, Zeke!
Rang come a ding-ding, Mary. Pudding little gal that ever did stay. Her name was Devilish Mary.
And that was one of the most spectacular things about this show, is that it was so popular that they immediately turned out a record once Disneyland had its version, it was the same show, but an LP, a record of the actual show and a bunch of the background songs that were played that you could purchase. And it's such a huge hit even today, you can find it on iTunes.
And you and I both have that original vinyl, don't we?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, because it was like the Hall of Presence one, and it had, it was a 12-inch vinyl, and it had a book, and it had beautiful color artwork in there as well, too. So it was more than just the album. You actually got sort of photos and stories along with it as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was early on, there was all these great souvenir guides and books about Disney World and the construction and all of these, and they continued into even the littlest detail in the littlest souvenir that had all this history and fact and backstory pieces to it.
You know, when we talk about attractions, we always talk about tributes along the way. Sometimes it's a subtle tribute to a former attraction, an Imagineer, to Walt, whatever it may be. The Country Bear Jamboree is not unique. It has a tribute in here as well, too. And it's actually found in a form of a character, and a character I alluded to earlier, which is, for a lot of people, this was my dad loved Big Al. And Big Al was very much inspired by Albertino, who worked with Mark Davis. This was sort of Mark Davis's tribute to Albertino. And if you Google, and maybe I'll try and put in the show notes, images of Albert. Big Al is Albertino. He's sort of a big guy, sort of slumped over shoulders. I mean, if he was to stand up with a middle guitar, it would look just like Big Al.
It is. It's shocking how similar they are. I mean, he is the human embodiment of Big Al. And Big Al is, he's a fan favorite. He's had books dedicated to him. They knew early on that this character was going to just tug at the heartstrings.
And now his voice, Big Al's voice in the recording of Blood on the Saddle, was actually by Western movie star Tex Ritter, who was the dad of John, I'm from Three's Company, Ritter.
Yes, and he gets a lot of jokes in, and he gets a lot of playtime that some of the other characters don't get. And it's an extraordinary star, an extraordinary character, and it's a great combination.
A couple other quick notable characters, because of their voices, are actually not animatronic bears, but they hang on the walls. Obviously, Melvin, Buff, and Max, as you go sort of left to right. Max, also voiced by Pete Renaday, and Buff is by Thurl Ravenscroft, again, Disney legend. Most people, I think, know him from The Haunted Mansion.
Absolutely. And then you have Bill Lee, who does Melvin. And this trio kind of bookend the show And as we get to it, they also book in the, you know, the post show area of the Country Bears. And one other character that's not a bear we need to name is Sammy, which is Henry's pet raccoon or friend raccoon.
Yes, folks, we only have high-class stuff on this show. And now, here's a special treat out of Tampa. A little bit of ever-loving, cuddlesome fluff. Our own Trixie.
And every time I see Trixie come down, she is unique because I always say to people that you always say that there's no drinking in the Magic Kingdom. There's no alcohol in Magic Kingdom. But what does Trixie have in her hand?
Oh, she had a glass of wine.
Tears will be the chaser for her wine. So.
And it's amazing that there's liquid in that cup and she doesn't spill it. You know, it's a testament to the calibration of those audio animatronics.
It's like one of those baby spill-proof glasses. So, but, you know, this is the thing, Ryan. You know, we talk about attractions that get updated, the music changes, it sort of becomes more modern for as the decades pass. You know, that's why the theme song for, you know, some of the theme songs for Walt Disney World have changed from what they were from those sort of very hip 1970s. But here the music has remained from day one. And again, I think that's a testament to guys like Exitencio and George Bruns. And they all sort of still get people clapping and stomping. And when I go to Country Bear Jamboree, and I do go all the time still, mm-hmm. I watch the guests as much as I watch the show because I like to see how they react. And the 80-year-old grandmother is having as much fun as her daughter and her daughter's daughter, who is 8 years old, you know, clapping and stomping along. And for some people, you hear them singing along with the music as well.
And you're absolutely right. You know, when you have, you know, the sunbonnet singing, you know, the all the guys that turned me on, turned me down. I've seen, I can't count how many high school and college girls chuckling. I mean, it's just the songs are so, they have such a message that we all understand, you know, whether it's laughable or it's, you know, a little bit of a heart tug. But we identify with them and they've lasted. They've stood the test of time.
And I'm going to come back to that. I'm going to come back to your comment about them standing the test of time as we start wrapping up. Because I do want to talk about, there were a few changes, experiments, whatever you want to call them, throughout the years. Because back in 1986, they did introduce sort of a variation on the show. Pete Renaday was still there. Thurl Ravenscroft was there. But the show was different because now the Country Bears took a well-deserved vacation. And this was their vacation hoedown, sort of a sort of celebrating the great outdoors and the summer, and it was a whole new series of songs as well.
Get your bears and join us bears in the great outdoors. Ain't nothing like the great outdoors, feed your soul. Ain't nothing like the great outdoors, keep you from growing old.
If your mind's been hazy, you're feeling lazy and down on all fours.
Join us bears and suck up some air in the great outdoors.
Oh, like I said, they went on vacation and they took all of us with them.
Right.
And they hit, and you know, you had things like Willie Nelson's On the Road Again, Singing in the Rain. It was, you know, a lot more, we'll say, pop culture songs, people, things that everyone would recognize. But you had, you know, the bears wearing camp shirts, hugging an octopus. I mean, it got outrageous.
Yeah, and they also did a Christmas special for a few years, actually up until about 2005 when they stopped doing that seasonal rotation.
Ladies and gents, the Five Bear Run. When the snow begins to fall and your blood begins to freeze, it's time to stomp and holler and slap your hairy knee.
So hand me down my banjo, I think I'm gonna sing.
The time for sitting idle's in the summer or the spring. We're making tracks in the snow, everything is rosy. No more hibernating, boys, we're up on our feet. Just making tracks.
But it's interesting because I almost looked at this as they went to the vacation hoedown and then they went back to the original. And that reminds me a lot of another attraction not too far away in Adventureland. So when the original Tiki Room wants to get updated, they bring in Iago and Zazu, and there's Hot, 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 and there's Gloria Estefan, and then they go back to the original. And I think that's sort of what the Country Bears did. They tried to sort of modernize it, and I think maybe they realized that the appeal for this attraction was in its classic simplicity, and maybe these songs that potentially could be timeless.
Absolutely, and the Vacation Hoedown lasted a much shorter period than the Christmas Hoedown, which was on its seasonal status for, like you said, until 2005. But there is that timeless nature to these things, like the Tiki Room, like the speeches you hear in the Hall of Presidents, that they do tend to stick with you, and sometimes simpler is better.
Yeah, I mean, look, and this show, we said it was an e-ticket track. I mean, when we say this was very popular, it was hugely popular. I mean, it even spawned a spinoff, like the Ropers from Three's Company. They had a character breakfast. Remember the Melvin the Moose breakfast show over at Pioneer Hall at Fort Wilderness?
Yeah.
They had, and then it was eventually, I think it was Chippendale's Morning Country Bear Jamboree featuring Melvin the Moose, whatever. But so it really expanded beyond the confines of just Frontierland.
Right, and if you look at the design of Fort Wilderness, especially the Pioneer Hall area, the settlement area, it does play so well into that same feel of the Country Bears and in Frontierland that it was a natural extension. But they spawned the Disneyland attraction. They had the lunches there. You could hear Melvin and the three wall hangers on in the Mile High Bar while you were having lunch. There was so much crossover here because everyone knew the Bears. They loved the Bears. Big Al had his quote unquote cabin that he had turned into a merchandise kiosk across the fairway. Like Davy Crockett in his hat, it was a cultural experience.
Yeah, I mean, and it even beyond expanding to Big Al's cabin, the breakfast show, it expanded to Disneyland, it expanded to Tokyo Disneyland. The Bears were in, I don't know if you remember those old sing-along song things. It was a camp out at Walt Disney World, and the Country Bears were there. They were walk-around characters for a long time. I don't even know if we should mention the Country Bears movie from 2002 or not, but it was one of the first attractions to spawn a film after it, and which kind of was pretty successful with that whole Pirates franchise.
Right. I actually had somebody today, I was mentioning, I was talking about this tonight, and they're not a big Disney person, but they're like, oh, I saw that movie. And I'm like, please don't hold the attraction up to that movie. It's not a comparison.
It's like Godfather 3. It just doesn't exist.
You don't talk about it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 never happened. But it was so hugely popular that they believed that they could build a movie franchise because that movie left room for sequels. It expanded it to other parks, other areas. The walk-around characters can still be seen during the not-so-scary Halloween parade. So they still have that presence. It's not every day like it used to be, but that theater still gets pretty filled every time I go.
And so that was my question for you. Is the Country Bear Jamboree, is it still popular? Is it still a must-do? And you could be honest. Is it still a must-do, or is it, hey, you know what, if it's a one every now and then kind of attraction?
My wife hates me because I go see it every time I'm in Frontierland.
That's probably not the only reason why she hates you when you go to Walt Disney World. I've seen you taking pictures of everything except your wife. So,
yes, she's made me get better about taking pictures of people. She was like, you have 10,000 pictures and one of us. And I get in a lot of trouble. But it is. It's one of those, and she did prefer it under new management of the Tiki Room. But it was a must. It was a must do for me. It still is. Every time in town, I find some, a little bit of time that I can sneak in and hang out with Henry and the gang.
And so another question I have for you, and this is a question I want the listeners to weigh in on, is, look, there seems to be this renewed sense of nostalgia at the Disney park, specifically at Walt Disney World. Again, I mentioned the Tiki Room, the Orange Bird, very much indicative of that. For something like the Country Bear Jamboree, is it still relevant? Does it still resonate with people? Does it need to be updated or changed? Or can it stand on its own just the way it is? Is it an attraction that should not be touched, either because it's still timeless, because it has Walt's touch to it? It's sort of that same carousel of progress question. What do you do with it? People still go. People still enjoy it. All the audio animatronics are maintained well. It's still fresh for a lot of people that don't come that often. It's still fun for people of all generations. do you change it? Do you have to try and update this attraction, or does it still stand alone just the way it is for the same for the past 41 years?
You know, I knew this question was coming. I was thinking about it all day. I think, you know, I never want to be the one to stand in the way of progress. Things are going to change. Things have to change. But I think this is one of those rare examples that it is still entertaining to everyone who comes and sees it. Whether you're seeing it for the 100th time or the first time, it appeals. It seems to me that it appeals across all age spectrums, boy, girl, man, woman, grandma, grandpa. Everyone seems to take something from it, whether it's laughing at the funny bears singing or a song you remember your kids listening to when, you know, when you were much younger. And it does. It goes back to that music. You know, this is a piece of our musical heritage that we clung to for so long. And while music has changed, I think this does stand up to the test of time. And I don't really think there's a whole lot of room for changing. Not to say it can't be freshened up, you know, new coat of paint, new, you know, a new fur coat for some of the bears. But I think it stands up well.
Yeah, because and I'll play devil's advocate, because when you quote unquote update an attraction with music like this and you try and make it timely for 2012, I start thinking about attractions like under new management. I think about the Timekeeper that has music from that time. I keep thinking of Boys to Men and the Timekeeper, and it just screamed 90. You could be potentially locking this attraction now in a specific place and time, whereas that original music, it doesn't scream 1970s, the same way as the Carousel of Progress music doesn't scream the 1960s. It's music that is timeless. Does it make this attraction untouchable? I don't know. That's a question for you to answer. And I don't mean you, Ryan Wilson. I mean you, the person listening in his car or at work or in a treadmill, wherever. Is this attraction timeless? Is it untouchable? Or should it be changed? And if so, how? Because I don't know the answer. If you need to update the Country Bear Jamboree, how would you do it? Because I don't know how you would do it while still keeping the integrity and the charm that this attraction has had for 40 plus years.
Absolutely. I mean, I know that there is somebody out there screaming at their iPod right now that they want breakdancing bears.
Is breakdancing still relevant? I don't know.
You see how far we've already dated ourselves. I fully believe that it's that you change that music, and if you try to make it to a certain era now, you date that attraction. You set it firmly there in 5 years, 10 years. You know, it's a laughing stock. People are laughing at it because it's so out of place. Whereas with what we have right now, the music does tend to, you know, it gives us that time and place of that crossroads of our history. It fits perfectly into where it is in Frontierland. I think it satisfies all the requirements to just be left alone for now.
I agree. And I would certainly like to hear people, whether you agree or vehemently disagree, I would love for you to come by the show, leave your comments there, in this week's show notes over at wdwradio.com, click on the podcast link and find this week's podcast. Leave your comments there. Ryan and I will definitely go back and forth and comment along with you as well. Want to hear more of what you think about Country Bear Jamboree? Is this a must-do? Is this something you do every time? If you have young kids, what do your kids think? I have a 6 and 8 going on 35-year-old, and they still love this. They still dig the Country Bear Jamboree. Lot more to do. I hope you're going to be coming back again, that you'll drop in to see us now and then. I was going to continue on with the lines, but I would break out in song, and I really don't want to embarrass myself.
There were several times it almost came out, and I was like, no, I'm not singing this time.
I've sang Blood on the Saddle during the 5-year anniversary show, and I I vowed not to do that again. So, yeah, man, this was awesome. Next time you come down, me and you will grab some popcorn, grab a turkey leg, because they just taste better in Frontierland, and we'll hit the Country Bear Jamboree.
Sounds like a plan.
Blood on the Saddle. My kids are down there screaming because they used to sing this to me when I'd pick them up from school. Hey, guess what daddy's going to sing? And blood all around.
I told Aileen when I got home, I was singing it when she got home tonight. She was like, oh no.
Every big puddle.
Put it on the ground.
Don't change a thing.
Don't do it.
Don't forget to gather your belongings.
And your husband, too. It's been good to have you.
So long, folks.